This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Our book today is titled Lenten Reflections, From the Desert to the Resurrection. Our author today is Milton E. Lopes, joining me from Georgia. Welcome, sir, to the program.
Thank you.
This is an important book on many levels. You have over 300 and some pages dealing with this particular topic. Why focus on Lenten Reflections? What was the motivation for doing a book of this type?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've been a spiritual director for a number of years, and I've had a goodly number of people come to me with a host of questions, such as, who am I, where have I come from, where am I going, etc. And it seems, and also they'd make statements like, you know, going to church leaves me kind of empty. And I thought that one of the ways to help people along those lines is to look at the holiest season of the year for Christians, i.e. Lent, which is a preparation for the resurrection on through Pentecost. So I thought what I would do is to write some of my reflections over the years, some of the essays that I have written that relate to it, and try to bring them all together in some way, form, or fashion, hence the book. I've always wanted to read something that was a bit more than oversized pamphlets or collections of devotional readings. So I thought that the historical and a theological background, together with some kind of a pathway through Lent, would be appropriate for the mature individual who is interested in his or her spirituality, rather. And so, and really that tells you who I'm writing it for.
Sure.
I mean, the discerning layperson.
You also have mentioned something that many church-going folks really don't know, and that is the origin of the word Lent. Share with my listeners what that means.
Well, actually, let me go to the book here. It's actually a German word that comes from spring, and there is a Latin name for Lent that's called Quadragesimal, Quadragesima, which simply means 40 days. And over the centuries, the tradition has grown to go from maybe a couple of days before the crucifixion and Easter to 40 days, beginning with the first Sunday of Lent, and then three more days were tacked on, give us 40 days minus 40 plus days, and the plus days pretty much relate to the Sundays. So the Sundays are not traditionally a Lenten day, but the weekdays are.
There is also tradition in some denominations of applying a smudge of ash on the forehead. Is that also something that's covered in your book?
Thus thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return.
Chapter 6.
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, after I began talking about the origin and purpose of Lent, I actually get into the actual reflections. And I begin the book when talking about, and actually begins in chapter 6, Ash Wednesday, come, follow me these 40 days. And really that is the beginning of Lent as we know it. It's a time for preparing, and it's a time where we're asked to fast, we're asked to give alms, and we're asked to increase our prayer life. And I attempt to do an exposition, if you would, on each one of those items, like giving of alms. And I bring your attention to the widow's mite, where Jesus was observing people putting in the temple coffers. And he noticed that people would come in and give from their largesse, whereas the widow came in and she gave her all. And he brought our attention to that very fact. And this gives us an opportunity to talk about almsgiving through not only this this particular season, but throughout life, where we should be giving and helping our brothers and sisters. I also move into fasting, but fasting in a such a way that others don't necessarily know you're fasting.
Mm-hmm.
So don't go around with a long face and say, oh, look at me, I am fasting. But most every religion has a period of fasting. Ramadan for the Muslims. The Jews have a period of time where they fast as well. Now, it is true that ashes does bring that attention to people, but it also has grown to the point today that people will make statements like, oh, I see you're Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gives us an opportunity maybe to talk about our Catholicity. But I've also noticed that a number of non-Catholic brethren are also going to the time where they are having ashes as well.
Yes.
And what that really demonstrates, it's a call to discipleship.
I was just agreeing with you. It is a call to discipleship and a call to commitment. You have broken your book down into four general areas. The first things is the part one. Part two is preparation. Part three, the desert, where you deal with Christ and his, I guess, time just prior to the crucifixion. And then agony and exaltation in part four, and under that are subheadings or subchapters. When you began to write this, Milton, how long did you actually spend assembling all of the anecdotal stories and also the history that you've included in Lenten Reflections?
I've been asked that question before, and it's hard for me to put a finger on it. I think I was subconsciously doing it, say, 2 years ago, but I didn't start putting it together until a little over a year ago.
Hmm. You've done a good job in a year, then, for sure.
If you go to my bibliography, you can understand why I said that.
You have a fairly extensive book. I don't know of any others out there that I have bumped into, and I'm sure there might be some in the marketplace that deal with Lent and Lenten, the topic matter that's here. Have you found any other literature that deals with this subject in the way that you've approached it?
To be honest with you, no, I haven't. And there are a number of, in the Athens area, there are a number of groups who are using this as a biblical study during the Lenten season. And the comment is, I've never seen anything quite this thorough.
Mm.
And there was one group that had intended to only do the history and the theology, and my wife's in one of those groups, and she called, well, what are we going to read next? And they said, let's keep on going. So, no, I don't think there's that much out there.
It's a wonderful recommendation, just in its own merit. Certainly an important part of the Christian celebration season is the Lenten season. When you completed this, what was the underlying theme, besides the historical and spiritual journey of Christ and the church, was there anything else that came through as far as a message?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, because it is something that I've been pondering upon. I'm a member of what's known as the Lay Cistercians out at we have a local Trappist monastery, and I go out, my spiritual director is out there, and we were chatting. And actually, it wasn't him. It was when I went to confession. We were talking pretty much about the book. And he asked me if I was familiar with Kierkegaard. And, yeah, being familiar with Kierkegaard, he said, well, have you read Purity of Heart? And I knew of the book, but I had not read it. He says, well, read that, because I think it might have something to do with what you're about. And lo and behold, I happen to have it on my bookshelf. So what comes out, and that's a long way of saying this, that in order to acquire purity of heart, the items that I speak of, a metanoia, for example, which is simply to turn away from your sins. And so much of the book, as you're in the desert, is just doing that. And to help me and help us in that respect, I go to that time-honored a process called AA, And I take quite liberally quite a few pointers that are made by AA in terms of pulling, turning away from things and emptying yourself. Greek words, metanoia, turning away, kenosis, emptying yourself, which is very prominent, though you may not read those terms within AA. But that is pretty much the period of Lent, where you're turning away from your sins, from your failings and the like, and you're trying to empty yourself, and you're trying to cleanse yourself, and you're trying to purify yourself so that when Easter comes about, when you face the risen Jesus, you are pure and clean, and you're able to absorb. But that doesn't end there. At that point, you remember that Jesus was talking at one time about you do your work, you clean your soul, your heart, and the like, and the devil leaves you, but he comes back with 10 others. So that means the work doesn't stop there once you're clean. You've got to continue on and work on virtues. And hopefully, with the Spirit's help, we're able to approach things with measure of prudence. We're temperate in our behavior. We find within Pentecost, we find that the virtue of courage, that we benefit from that. And I could go on and on, but I think you get the message what I'm trying to say there.
Absolutely. That there's more to the walk than just the talk, and more to the journey than just the beginning. I love the Absolutely. Way you've placed that. Is there this book, I know your reflection is perhaps from a denominational standpoint, the Catholic denomination or Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Is this a book that will appeal to a broader audience than just those who are familiar with the Catholic traditions?
Oh, most assuredly. Just to start off, I am the unofficial chaplain of an Episcopal group of men, and I was a very happy signatory of 10 books for the group. They're going to be using it as a discussion book.
Super.
I had a lady come into my office some time back, and she bought a book with the idea of taking it to her Presbyterian women's group. And I find that was really made me feel good.
Fabulous.
I would suspect that my target audience would be, in addition, the mature Catholics, and I accentuate the word mature Catholic, Lutherans, mature Lutherans, Episcopalians, mainstream Protestants, and some evangelical Christians for whom religion and spirituality are very important. As a matter of fact, it is interesting that particularly the people that come to me are good for spiritual direction. Not that I have a great number, I don't. But a number of them have been non-Catholic. There's something here.
It's a trans-denominational read. Milton, is there any underlying theme or message that perhaps we haven't covered here that you want to make sure the reader gets a hold of?
Well, yes, there would be. And if you allow, let me just read what I have prepared for that kind of a question. And it reads, to be more spiritual, we must first come to grips with the fact that we have been fashioned from a scoop of mud onto and into which God breathed life. We are hence human, and we are divine. Accordingly, we must become mindful of our sinfulness and thereby undergo a change, metanoia, or turning away from our sinful ways. This leads to a sense of sorrow for our sinfulness and a determination to return to God, to be as he would have us to be truly ourselves, be holy as our Father in heaven is holy. Lent is the quintessential time of the year to address this call to be holy. This book offers an adult perspective and guide to a return to intimacy with a God who relentlessly pursues us.
The title of the book again is Lenten Reflections from the Desert to the Resurrection. Author Milton Lopes has joined me today to share his story. Thank you, Milton, for being a part of today's program. Where do my listeners get copies of your book?
Amazon. I guess the first would be at Westbow Press itself, who is the publisher of it. And one simply has to go online and pull up Westbow Press, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, And it's my understanding that there are a number of smaller organizations that are carrying it as well.
Well, best of luck with this, your book, and the contents. I wish you well in not only today's market, but in the future. Is there a book that will be a sequel or a follow-up to this one?
Well, that's kind of funny you ask that. Two things. One, my wife gave me the assignment to write one on Advent. Now, one would ordinarily think that that was very simple, but it is not. And that it is very interesting that it's only Matthew and Mark that even begin to talk about the birth of Jesus. That would take some doing is what I'm trying to say.
Sounds like a challenge.
But I did have another idea, and I think I've actually outlined this one. It's to go back to the desert theme, and the tentative title would be Desert Spirituality for the Modern Contemplative Man or Woman. Long title, but I need to work on it.
It means it's another challenge that you're facing, but I'm sure you're up to it. Thank you for joining me today and sharing your story.
Thank you.
For Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press, this is J. Douglas Parker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying to 14 ways to get a baby to eat and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Parker. The book is titled The Magic Horse, and the subtitle, Believe in Yourself and You Will Conquer All. Our author, Claudia Cassiato, joins me from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, for today's program. Welcome, Claudia, to the program.
Thank you, Jay, for having me on your
spectacular.
The radio.
Oh, I was going to say spectacular show, but, you know, radio is okay. You can use that if you wish. I think it's spectacular, but anyway, we're glad to have you.
Spectacular show.
We're glad to have you here. The back of your book begins a short paragraph. During a stormy night, Claire heard a thud. She peeked out. A bubble of green light floated in the air. Then it burst. A white horse appeared with gold wings and a black diamond on its forehead. So begins the tale of the magic horse. Where did this idea come from, Claudia? Where did the inspiration come to create this story?
Well, my niece was about 1.5, and she was bored with the books that she had, so I made up stories. And this was about in 1998 that the idea of the magic horse came to me, and then I decided to see how it was going to evolve, the story was going to evolve. So I started writing one chapter every 1 to 2 years. But it didn't surface completely until I took a writing course with the Institute of Children's Literature in 2005. So that's when it started to evolve more into the story that came out as The Magic Horse.
You have, among your characters, of course, your main character, that's Claire. I see in the graphics and the artwork an angel. I see a church setting. I see several different elements that you've included. Were there personal elements that were included in the storyline? Did this occur because of maybe some things you observed in your own personal life?
I did. I was a registered nurse, and I worked with trauma cases, post-traumatic stress disorder. I just found that there was one patient of ours that she actually had a spiritual crisis. You know, she witnessed a death of a resident. She was a superintendent, and he hanged himself. And, you know, she had a very difficult time to believe in God again. And she went through a dark period. And eventually, she was able to understand the concept of what happened, and to blame God for what happened. It wasn't not within her control. But it's this notion that when children face death or a crisis situation or a tragedy situation, I noticed that the adults that were able to cope with had a better understanding of what was going on than those that didn't. And I'm trying to understand, is it possible that it's from their childhood that they had some coping skills to cope with these situations before this tragedy or trauma occurred? And this is where I'm thinking, you know, is it possible if we instill children with coping skills that they're able to be better equipped to deal with these situations when they come at hand?
The story is a little startling, since you have begun to write this for 9 to 12 year olds. That was your general audience. Your second chapter deals with a funeral setting. That's a little bit unusual for most books. Was that something that you discovered was not dealt with much in the children's market?
Well, I just think that for a child to deal with another child's death, it's different, I believe, than an adult death, because, I mean, they're actually witnessing a possibility that it could have been themselves in that situation. And so here, this is where you have to draw the line, is when do you allow a child to go to their friend's funeral? And if so, how would you imagine death in a different way for children to cope better? So, you know, I added a bit of humor at that funeral. I wanted her to witness Mary Allen, like, you know, in spirit, that she was okay with this, to see her in spirit and to have that humor in the funeral. It was to alleviate some of her pain and some of her not understanding even the concept of death. I just think it's really, really important that if we are to teach children about death, we should teach them not to fear it, but to embrace it. It is a part of life.
Are there other messages that you've included in the general storyline? You have 74 pages. Obviously, you have mentioned humor is included in what would be normally viewed as a tragic incident. Are there other aspects to this story that deal with the continuation and the positive side of life?
Yes. So Claire and Mary Allen obviously share a spiritual journey on Earth. And they actually, there's one scene where they're confronted with the roaring waterfalls at the healing pond of life.
Yes.
And this is where they have to make a decision whether fear is going to control them or freedom is going to liberate them, dealing with a situation. And it's also teaching children, it's the way of your thinking that affects how you feel. And the healing pond of life is a great example to teach children the different type of emotions has an impact in the way you're going to feel. And eventually, it will have an impact also on possibility in the fact that certain illnesses possible affected by how you think as well. It's very interesting. There's a lot of work being done right now, how your thoughts actually have an impact in even the process of illness. So you want children to be able to have a control of their emotions. And yes, they're going to be angry. They're going to have all these emotions, especially when they're dealing with a death that they have no control over. And this is just an example of, if you were to take your thoughts and really, really understand the impact it has, you would free yourself of so many different emotions that are really negative emotions, to say, like the word hate. When you instill that word hate within yourself, you have no understanding how it does impact you even in the emotional state, in the health state, and even in the spiritual state.
You have story that you've targeted towards children, but what you've described to me might also be a story that would be adaptable and of benefit to older readers.
Yes, I agree. I targeted the younger children from 9 to 12 years of age is because they believe in magic still. Hmm. If you look at it, they believe in magic, and it is a magic horse that comes from heaven. And that's why I indicated from 9 to 12 years old. Because with children, especially in society today, they need imagination to follow their dreams. And if I could target those children from 9 to 12 and reflect them and help them, show them how coping skills can really help them to deal with these situations, then they're not gonna struggle through life with the past of trauma, and they're able to face it and they're able to cope with it. So yes, I just chose that target because I know they believe in magic.
You've described your one character, Mary Ellen, as a prankster. Share with my listeners which of the storyline incidences underscore how much of a prankster she is.
Well, she's a little bit rebellious. You know, it's her way or no way. Let's mm-hmm. just put it that way. And there's one scene where they're at the psychologist's office, and obviously the psychologist doesn't believe once you're dead, you're dead. You don't come back.
Mm-hmm.
So she plays something. She plays like a scenario where she says, "Oh, I'll show him that I'm not an imaginary friend." She knows how to get away with stuff, like, you know, and even at the grocery store where she caused a little bit she's a bit of a troublemaker too, let's just put it that way.
Sounds like a normal child.
It does, like, you know, and the thing is, if you really look at things, I think you would say Mary Ellen is more curious and seeing how far she can get away with things.
Uh-huh.
And Claire, she goes along with it, but then she realizes that she has a little bit of, how would you say it?
Restraint, perhaps?
Yeah, you know, she, but at the end, though, she comes out pretty strong as well. After this, she becomes a stronger person to cope with her friend's death and to the magic horse. Raphael tells her, "You're going to be a secret agent of God." Well, you know, if I'm going to be a secret agent of God, then I must believe in the person that I am to help another person. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So she gains strength, and she actually helps her to cope with Mary Ellen's death, and she becomes a bit of a hero, you know, in the end.
The way you've described your character sounds a little autobiographical. Not that I know you well, but it's possibility. Were you a little bit like that Mary Ellen character as a child?
Mary Ellen, I would say so. I, you know, I did things that probably would shock some people. Like, you know, when I was really young, my sister and I were sitting on the veranda, and I actually said to her, "I could probably stick my head through those two bars." and I envisioned myself doing it, and I actually got my head through, but it was very difficult. I didn't know how to envision myself to take it out. And I was like a little curious Claudia, let's just say. Like, you know, I would do things. I would also, you know, my godmother bought us a doll, and she walked. Well, you know, I wasn't really, she walked. I that's great, but I wanted to know why she walked. And it's really important that kids that have curiosity probably are able to imagine better regarding to a situation and to able to cope and face with it, you know. So
sure, and able to explore if they're creative, which you obviously
exactly.
are.
Exactly,
obviously.
They feel that their imagination is more developed. They improvise. Like, I would, like, all through my life, I would say, if I didn't have this, how would I improvise it? And that's where my curiosity and imagination. So imagine how you would do something as well.
Right. Now, this is your first story that you've actually published, correct, Claudia?
Correct.
How would you introduce this to somebody and also share with them the underlying theme or message that you are trying to convey?
I would tell them it's a humorous story. It's spiritual and it's magical. And I would tell them it grips their heart because it is a difficult topic. Death is a difficult topic, especially for children. And the thing is how, you know, bringing coping skills into a situation like death as well, and the importance of it. Like for children, it's really important that they understand that they shouldn't fear death. Number one, death is a part of life. You're on a spiritual journey. You are going to face situations like this. And the more coping skills that you have, you're better equipped and you can move forward even with trauma and tragedy. And it can even be hospitalization. When a child is hospitalized, they're in a different atmosphere, and they need to understand they're still in control of the situation, even when they are in facing something like illness.
Beautifully said. The title of the book again is The Magic Horse. Our author, Claudia Cassiato, has joined me from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Claudia, where can my listeners get copies of your book?
They can go to either Balboa Press or to Amazon, Google Play, or Barnes & Noble.
Fabulous.
Or they can go to their local bookstore and they can ask for a copy, and I'm sure they can get it for them.
Fantastic. You have enjoyed the process, I'm presuming, sufficiently. Is there another book in the works?
There is. There's a sequel, but I've yet to decide how it's going to work out. And probably the main characters are going to probably remain, but there'll be other characters involved. We'll see what comes out of the creative zone when I'm in there.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining me today and sharing your story.
Thank you, Jay.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is Jay Douglas Barker. Author Marlene Garten has written a book titled Constitution of Iron, Are Your Dreams Dying on the Vine? And I welcome Marlene to the program. Welcome.
Thank you. Very nice to be talking to you today.
Pleasure to visit with you. You have written a book of 124 pages. It has a very stunning graphic on the front, someone in a suit of iron. Share with me and my listeners what the story is behind the title, Constitution of Iron.
I had a 26-year prison ministry, and one of the sermons that I preached there to the inmates was about the life of Joseph. And, of course, Joseph was imprisoned, and you would think at certain times that his dreams would never come true, because if he had one good thing happen, then bad things happen. But really, we can study the life of Joseph, and we know that God gives dreams to everybody. Everybody has a dream from God, but some people, when they reach the difficulties and encounter the problems that come along with it. They're not like Joseph, where they keep the faith and go through. They give up. So that's what my book is all about. And you mentioned it being short. That was my directive. Don't get bogged down in the middle. Don't put in a lot of scriptures going here and there and everywhere. Tell the story just as quickly that you can do it and still get the message across.
Since you were in your ministry, been working with prison inmates, was also part of this inspiration to get a message to them that they shouldn't give up?
Well, if that prison has closed now, but if any of them are out there and still watching what I do, I sincerely hope that they pick that up too, because it would be definitely written for them.
Who did you write your book for? Who do you think is going to find this an appealing read?
Actually, I think there's every person on the planet could get something out of Constitution of Iron. And the reason I say that is because God did put dreams in our hearts. He's got purposes in us. And how many times have you met people and they're getting up in age and they think they haven't accomplished anything? They don't know what God wanted them to do? Well, that's what this book is designed to do. It's to resurrect the things in you that God's placed in you. And, you know, that person will gain the satisfaction of knowing that they're in God's will and that they pressed through and allowed God to work the dream through them. And then the world's a better place, because God's not going to give bad dreams. He's given positive things for us to do, and it affects the whole world.
Would you describe your book as a motivational book or an inspirational book, one that inspires anybody using Joseph as the template?
Well, I call it inspirational, but it'll motivate you to put your dream back on track, and if it's died on the vine, to resurrect and put new life in it. Because, you know, God's the miracle-working God. He resurrects dead things. Jesus Christ resurrected from the dead. So God knows all about resurrection, and if your dreams have been derailed, they can be put back on track.
One of your chapters, The Dream Comes First, is that dealing specifically with Joseph's story, or is that also one that can be adapted to my life?
Well, it can be adapted to your life, because you got to recognize that you've got the dream before you can start walking it out. And it takes faith. That walk is a walk of faith, and where so many people give up is that when they come across the difficulties, the point B's, the no man's land, the place where we give up, when they go through there, they don't realize that dream is a seed, and it's gone underground, and it takes faith to believe that God is working where you can't see him working, and that when that dream comes back up and we get to point C of dream fulfillment, how much better it is to have gone through the dark parts and the problems and pressed through than if our dream had been easy. You know, we wouldn't be talking about Joseph. He might not have even made it to the Bible had not it been for the fact that he went through so many adversities and problems to get to dream fulfillment.
Explain for my listeners the historical significance of the life of Joseph, besides the inspirational side that you have recounted.
Well, it's remarkable. The actual story, I guess, of Joseph, if the historians are right, took place around 1700 B.C., and I mentioned something about David, too, because he plays a part in that, and it takes place a little later. But it's significant that something that happened that long ago can be such a prevalent part of what's going on with our lives today. And we could look at the world situation, we can look at the economy, we can look at jobs. We have every excuse today to not fulfill our dreams, to give up, to say it's too hard. But it's the things that Joseph went through are applicable to our lives today and in this world situation, because God wants to do miracles. After all, when we get our dream fulfilled, God gets the glory, and he loves to get the glory, and he loves to do miracles. He loves to resurrect things.
Now, to give a recap of Joseph's life from my perspective, I believe Joseph was sold into slavery by his jealous brothers, and in that slavery situation ended up imprisoned and yet was resurrected because of his ability to interpret dreams into a place of political leadership. And his political leadership and vision caused him to set aside food for an upcoming famine that was something that he saw in the future. His nation, the nation of Israel, was saved because he was in leadership and was able to preserve that nation. Is that a way of recapping his story?
Yes, and actually I look at it as the whole world was saved through what was going on with God's plan in providing the plan for food during the time of famine. And the thing, the most important part of my book is about that point B, the testing part. You know, our point Bs may not be as severe or as long as it was for Joseph. And we can have all kinds of excuses why our dreams don't come true. But you mentioned it there. The iron of adversity that worked into Joseph's soul, in the end, he wore golden necklaces and chains of rulership, the second in command of the whole world. And that's what God wants to do in our lives. Maybe not make us the president, but turn our dreams around, and it's just remarkable, remarkable what God can do.
Marlene, describe for my listeners the process, the writing process, the authoring process. How long did it take to complete your book, and was it a complicated issue getting it completed?
It took me years to, as a matter of fact, I had to retire from my position at Norfolk Southern Corporation to sit down and actually spend a year writing this book. And then, even after it was written, to go over it and over it and over it and make sure that I got everything in it that God wanted to go in it. But, you know, my dream is still going. You can say, okay, you've got a finished product. You've got a real nice-looking book here that's exactly what you wanted. But, you know, my dream goes underground again, because what's good is a book if people aren't reading it. And my book, I believe, is for the masses. I believe it's for the world. It's not for my friends who are growing up in the same church I'm going in, where we get a steady diet of dream fulfillment and faith. It's for people who are from any walk of life who needs their dreams resurrected. And I think that touches all of us, because I don't think God just gives us one dream.
And Marlene, take a couple of sentences and introduce this book to someone who just tuned into this segment and doesn't have a clue what Constitution of Iron is about. Share with them how they should get a copy.
I would start out with a question to them. Has God spoken to you in a dream or in the quiet time or in your spirit, and you know that he's speaking, and then did you let that dream die on the vine? Well, it's not too late to resurrect them and learn that adversity and problems are all part of dream fulfillment. My book can be obtained through Westbow Press, through Amazon, ChristianBooks.com, Barnes & Noble. You can go to my website, www.MarleneGarten.com, and most any bookstores can get it for you.
Marlene, is there another book in the future? Do you have a dream for that?
I do have a dream for that, and that's a new dream. I know what the book is to be about, and I'm just finishing up with the marketing of this book, Constitution of Iron, and I'm looking forward to book number two.
And please recount for my listeners one more time the ways they can get a copy of this, including your website.
www.MarleneGarten.com. It's available through Westbow Press, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, ChristianBooks.com, and through most any of your online Christian bookstores.
They also can request this from their local bookseller, and they should be happy to order a copy of this in for them should they choose to do and go that direction. The title of the the title of the book, again, is Constitution of Iron. Subtitle, Are Your Dreams Dying on the Vine? Our author, Marlene Garten. Thank you, Marlene, for joining me today. Should there be a follow-up book on this, we hope to visit with you and talk about that as well.
I hope that, Jay, that we will be able to talk in the future about that next book. Look forward to it.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing your story and the story of Joseph in written form inspirational, motivational, and a short read, 124 pages. Thanks again for being on our program today.
Thank you.
For Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.